From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 395, Troubleshooting SQL with guest Kevin Klein, recorded Friday, October 31st, 2014. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thank you so much for listening to Run As Radio. We couldn't do it without you. Today, my guest is Kevin Klein, and he's a long-term Microsoft SQL Server MVP and is a founder and former president of PASS and the author of SQL in a Nutshell. And he tweets at K.E. Klein. You've got the battle of Kevin Klein. Isn't there an actor?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, I created all of my social media sort of stuff with the E in there, Kevin E. Klein.
Right.
That's my middle initial. And I still get about one or two fan letters a month for him, for the actor. So yeah. I got one for a fan in Ireland. They saw that Kevin Klein was going to speak at a SQL Server conference in Ireland. Would you come and speak to our fan club? And I said, yeah, I'd be happy to, but I don't think you know who I am.
I am a speaker, just not the speaker you want. There is a football coach, I think at the college level, I'd not even be at the NFL level, named Rich Campbell. And so every so often I get crossovers on that too.
Love the team, man.
Yeah. Who do you think is going to win on Sunday? Beats me. I just don't know.
Right.
Oh, yeah. It's a weird, weird world.
Isn't it?
Yeah. What have you been working on these days, my friend?
Well, a lot of work around performance tuning,
mm-hmm.
You know, and this is just one of those things that is a perpetual issue for those of us who live in the database world. I think one of the things that a database person, or maybe you're a sysadmin and you don't have a DBA in the house, so you're the go-to person for database problems. And one of the big things that we're used to when we're in that role is who really is responsible or is the person I should talk to or blame, you know, when things aren't performing that well.
Well, you know, in a DevOps world, you'd think this would be more cohesive than it actually is, that it's application performance that matters. But as a web tuning guy, I cannot tell you how many times we have it's a database problem. Blame the DBA, and they walk away. I can go for lunch then. And you guys fix that.
Exactly. Yeah, I've always called that the blame game.
Yeah.
And when I was an enterprise DBA myself, that was kind of my first line of thought was, you know, what do I look at to figure out who really is the, you know, what metrics do I mm-hmm. examine to see who is it that is going to, you know, actually be the person to get the blame.
Well, and I've sat on both sides of the fence on this. I've been the web guy who said, yeah, we're having database performance issues. And I've been the DBA where people have been throwing that stuff at me and say, hey, fix your crappy database. And I've always found as a DBA, you have to be super patient and do the diagnosis. Like, can we actually find this problem? What do you think is the problem? Where do you start?
Yeah, you know, that is exactly right. And one of the things, you know, I speak very frequently and, you know, I'm at conferences all the time. And one of my really popular sessions is called End-to-End Troubleshooting.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's my methodology. It's my checklist for where I start and how I step through that whole process. And if I could just for a moment plug some of the content that I have online, you can actually see a short version of that. Of a recording of that session on sqlcentry.tv.
Nice.
SQL.CENTRY.
And that's home base for you, right?
Yeah. So that's the video website. And so you can see that. And I've also just published a white paper that goes through that whole process as well. It's one of those things that I'm sure you have You've experienced this too, where you go down one path and you try it until you get burned because you missed something, or you overlooked it, or you didn't do it quite right. And so you add little checks to your checklist. And after you've been doing it for a year or two, then you feel like, okay, now I've got a pretty solid step-by-step checklist. And part of the checklist you used, you have two versions, right? You have the one version for, I don't really know anything about the server or the workload or I'm going from square one.
Right.
But then if we're lucky, we have a situation which our estate is composed of servers that we do know really well, at least some of them. You know, we know that, you know, here's the web app. It sits on this particular middle tier. It connects back to this SQL server. It normally has, you know, this many connections on a given day. You know, its workload looks like XYZ. So you kind of use a different list based on whether you know a lot about the system or you don't.
Right.
But let's say
you have that luxury of you've got lots of experience with it.
Right. Exactly. So if I'm on the short list, my first question is, what's changed?
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's one of those funny things, depending on how big your organization is or how much kind of top level control there is, it might be that, you know, there's some dev who pushed something out and they didn't go through a really rigorous change management process. And,
right. As it happens, you know, on occasion.
It does. It does. Something changed. You know, a table on the back end has a different schema now than it did before. And so that means all the execution plans and the plan cache get flushed out. That sort of stuff. So that's my first stop on the well-known system. What's different? Why was it working well yesterday? And what has changed to make it not work well today?
And in the best case scenario, the only thing that's changed is traffic's increased. I mean, as a performance tuner, I would always lead when I'm brought in as a consultant. It's like, congratulations on having a good problem.
Right.
If nobody was using your site, it run awesome. But now there's so many people using it that suddenly stuff that was fast enough yesterday isn't fast enough today.
Exactly. Exactly. Conversely, the flip side, you know, if you don't know much about your system, and this was a problem for me as an enterprise DBA where I had hundreds of SQL servers out there, and every now and then you'd get a call from, you know, some guy in the San Francisco office, like, hey, this is Mary in finance, and we bought this server, and it's not working. You're the DBA, fix it. You know, and you're
like, go away.
I've never even heard of this before. You know, I don't know what hardware it is. I don't know anything. So in those kind of situations, and it's one of those sort of things where I got burned because I didn't do this. So I have a couple quick steps I always walk through just to make sure. It's the sort of thing that it's very actionable information because it rules out yes or no. Do I need to do something else? So the first thing I always do on that kind of server is, you got to look at the Windows, event logs. And I learned the hard way that, you know, somebody would call, I'd say, okay, SQL Server problem. And I would assume it's a SQL Server problem. And so I'd start looking at SQL Server when in fact, I really hadn't verified that it wasn't something outside of SQL Server.
For sure.
You know, so every now and then I would find out, well, it turns out that, you know, there's the domain name controller is having a problem, or the Active Directory server isn't, you know, is suddenly slowed down for some
reason. Just going and looking at criticals and errors in the logs, you know, maybe your machine has been crying out for help all this time. You just haven't been looking.
Oh my gosh, that you are so spot on. That was one of the things also that was very surprising to me when I started to do this. And again, like I said, it was because I didn't do it once or twice and I was burned by it. So I'm like, okay, so the first thing I'm going to do, just quickly take a look. And, you know, it just takes a few seconds. And if there's nothing there, you move on and get closer into SQL Server. But if there is something there, one of the things I found, just like you said, was that often this problem had been going on for a long time. No one had been addressing that problem. But again, depending on, you know, your workplace, the thing that was great about that for me was we had big enough IT enterprise that I could now hand it off to the team that really was responsible for that.
So you're just sort of surfacing the beginnings of an actual, hey, look, finding an error in an event log isn't much. It's just a starting point. You've still got a long way to go, but the argument the DBA should fix it is suddenly moot.
Exactly. And that, you know, they say the fastest query that you might have is the one you don't have to run.
You know, and you never run. I'm totally with you, brother. That one I agree with.
So the fastest troubleshooting for me as an IT pro working with SQL Server is the one I don't have to fix. You know, then the next step is to do the same thing, but this time inside of SQL Server itself. So SQL Server has its own error logs and event logs. And another part of SQL Server is the SQL Server agent, which controls all the scheduled jobs.
Right.
It has logs as well. So I just take a moment and check those to make sure that nothing erroneous is happening. And it might sound weird, but sometimes getting that error message is the best thing that could happen to you.
Sure.
Because if you've got a one of the nice error messages, I call them nice because that means there's a well-documented solution to the problem. Mm-hmm. You know, so you look it up and it says, you know, error. Oh, and I'm going back to a long time here for this particular error number, but, you know, like a 604 error or 1105.
It's sad that you pull these out of your head, Kevin. Just, I am hearing you describe scars on your soul right now.
But, you know, that's a, some of those are things like, hey, your database has run out of space and it wasn't set to auto grow.
Right.
You know, so that kind of error message is great. It's like, oh, yay.
That's because it's imminently fixable.
Exactly.
Given we have disk space, but it's like, it's also a huge performance hit. When database starts to struggle with disk space, like, yeah, you slow? No kidding.
Funny side story there. One time I went into a server that had thrown that error, run out of disk space, and I looked at the server, and it was way over provisioned, but the disk had filled up. Mm-hmm. And what I eventually found was the problem was that some of the sysadmins were using it for some file services and were moving files through. And when they would copy a file to the server and then they would copy it to another location, they would delete it. And after a year and a half of doing that, they had never once emptied the recycling bin.
Oh, man.
And so there was hundreds upon hundreds of gigabytes of stuff in the recycling bin.
That takes a while to empty.
Oh, indeed it does. Yeah. And so Windows had to keep up, you know, this map to all of those different objects and so forth. And right. So there was even a little bit of CPU overhead because of all of that.
Yeah, no kidding.
But, yeah. So it's just,
again, but that's still a big red button happy fix.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, if you can get one of those kind of errors, that's a good thing. Now, there are, of course, other kinds of errors that are really, really bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, catastrophic sorts of failures in SQL Server. That's pretty easy to tell because SQL Server will give you a severity level.
Right.
And if it's less than severity level 17, you can totally ignore it. Right. If it's around 17 or 18, those might be something like a deadlock has occurred,
right?
Which is, a more routine sort of error if you're not real familiar with SQL Server errors. Once you get up to say between 20 and 23, it's bad. 24 and 25 are critical. Something imminently horrible is going to happen to your
system. And aren't these typically hardware issues then? Like something seriously corrupt in the system?
Yes, exactly. Or something has seriously corrupted
the database itself.
The database itself has somehow become corrupt, which usually at the root cause is something in the storage media. You know, it's not recording data properly to the sector on the disk or something like that. So, yeah, you're right on that. But, the fix might be something really painful, like you have to go to the last good backup.
Yeah.
And because you didn't check the error logs, that was 2 weeks ago, you know, something of that nature.
And you've got lots of data that's now suspect. Like, finding an old corruption that's just sort of grown and like a mold in your database, that's chilling. Oh, boy. Here we go.
Right. Now, once you've either ruled in or ruled out both the Windows or the hardware level kinds of errors with checking those event logs, the SQL Server event logs, your next step would be to begin to look at specific performance related things. You know, it's not an error that's causing the problem. It's just overall performance.
Right.
And the place I usually start there is what we call weight statistics in SQL Server.
And I'm an old school SQL guy, so my reflexes go to the profiler, but we've got weight statistics now. We've had them for years. You really should look there first.
Right. Now, Profiler is great in the sense that it's kind of an event-driven way to see what's happening.
Right.
You know, who's firing off requests for
what queries are actually taking a long time.
Exactly. You know, and so you could put in a filter on Profiler, or maybe in the newer versions of SQL Server, you could use extended events,
right?
Which is very similar. And you could say anything that's running longer than half a second, you know, or maybe longer than 20 seconds. And so, and just for this database, you know, just for the app database or just for TempDB. And so you might look at those things with Profiler. The thing that's really good about waitstats, which you can use starting in SQL Server 2005, is that, like the name implies, it tells you kind of a broad category of where SQL Server is waiting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a whole bunch of categories where SQL Server waits all the time anyway.
Yeah, not necessarily bad.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, let's say that there was, you know, a doctor had a measurement called wait between heartbeats.
Right.
And you added all of the seconds between each of your heartbeats. That would be a really big number.
Right.
But if you were to look at that at the top, you know, biometrics for a human body, you wouldn't be concerned about
it. No, that's good news, actually.
That's right, because that means your heart is still beating.
Absolutely. Kevin, give me one sec to pay the bills here. Because Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail and the fighters of Configuration Drift. Configuration Drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, at ScriptRock.com/RUNASRADIO.
That sounds like a product I need.
You know, it's one of those beautiful things. And you know, we're talking about performance tuning here, right? And as a web server guy, like, I've got a web farm, 3-4 machines, and you believe they're the same. You know, I've set them up from the same scripts, da-da-da-da-da-da. Let me tell you the truth. You know, so actually having a tool that goes and checks your machines and tells you the differences, it always finds something.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of those things. And you know, I would imagine the same issue when you talk about clustered SQL servers. Like, are they really configured the same? Really,
absolutely.
Really? Like, absolutely. Down to the brass tacks on that. Because, you know, when you're trying to understand what's going on in the system, just the same way you've talked through this problem of, you know, start with the event logs, dudes. Like, make sure you don't have major errors that are just far more important than any individual query. That's, yeah. Are you actually running on the system you think you're running on? That's a good thing to know.
And, yeah, just to further that, you know, that's one of the things that, in the worst and most difficult of these troubleshooting scenarios, when you get down to the final analysis, it was something just very, very minuscule. One had a different HBA
right.
firmware update than the other.
Oh, man, that is so tiny. And you think it would have no effect at all.
And at the end of the day, it's what made you miserable for the last 48 hours.
Totally with you. You know, and just, getting to the true underlying problem. So, you know, being able to find that sort of thing is really challenging. But I hate to think we're going to focus solely on exception cases like this. At some point, there are queries that are slow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so the wait statistics can really help you see if that's the case or not. So, for example, there, you know, as we were just saying, there's a long list of wait stats that you can safely ignore.
Right.
They just indicate the natural organic processes. Mm-hmm. But there are also a pretty reliable set of wait stats, and I have a top 10 list in the video that I mentioned on SQLcentury.tv
right.
That really help you determine, hey, you know, is this a disk storage problem? And that's one of the biggest kind of warnings I would put out there to people who haven't done much troubleshooting themselves, is the natural temptation is to always say, well, you know, we've still got a few slots in there for RAM. Why don't we upgrade the memory? You know, let's throw some money and some hardware at it and see if the problem goes away. And one of my long-lasting warnings, I've been doing touting this for years, is that Sucktacular SQL will always suck.
Right? you cannot always dig yourself out of hardware with hardware.
Yeah. you know, right on. You cannot, you know, if it's written in just a sucky way, it's going to suck up all those resources.
Yes.
And
you,
so
you can just keep throwing memory at it, because the correct amount of memory for SQL Server is always more.
Exactly.
But it's not going to save you from yourself.
Right. So if you have, you know, in one instance, using this methodology, we were trying to figure out what was going. Performance was bad, and we didn't have weight stats at the time. So like you, we used Profiler. But if we had had weight stats, we would have been looking at, say, I/O to see who was running really long running queries.
Right.
And so once you use the weight stats, you would then go to the next step of using some dynamic management views. For example, the DMVs that look at the plan cache. Mm-hmm. And we'd see which of these were consuming the most in the plan cache, which tables and so forth had the most churn in the plan cache. And what we found was that there was a manager in one of our teams that had somehow gotten a password to the SQL Server, and they were using access and doing select star from the table. Right? And so, you know, 200 million records later, they're like, now I can use my access database to sort it the way I want to.
Right.
And, you know, if you have a couple people just writing really bad queries like that, it just does not matter. So, yeah, exactly like you were saying, the weight stats will get you into the ballpark.
Right.
Is it queries that are running too long, or queries that are taking too much CPU, or queries that are blocking or locking, you know, deadlocking? So the weight stats will say things like it's asynchronous I/O, or it's network, or it's, you know, one of these various different things. You take a look at the DMV that relates to that particular category, like the DMV that'll tell you about the I/O that's happening on the system. Mm-hmm. And by DMV, just to make sure I'm clear on that, that's the dynamic management views.
Right.
Available to SQL Server that show, you know, its internal instrumentation.
And they've been around since 2008. And if you're not using them yet, get to it. You're missing out. They are great tools.
Absolutely. Absolutely great tools. And the good news, too, is that you don't have to write your own queries. Just like there are great sites where you can go and pick up on PowerShell scripts that are really useful. Mm-hmm. Same thing for SQL Server. So, you know, use your favorite search engine and type in diagnostic queries SQL Server or diagnostic DMV SQL Server, and you'll probably see number one on the list some scripts by a guy named Glenn Berry.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic scripts that'll, you know, give you everything that you need if you don't want to go to the trouble of writing those queries yourself. So then they will point out exactly which of these, maybe it's a stored procedure, maybe it's some ad hoc SQL statements, you know, maybe it's some parameterized things, and they'll actually show you which, hopefully you don't have, you know, 500 offending SQL statements. Maybe
you would hope.
Yeah. But you can always, you know, just start at the top of the list, and then you would start tuning. You know, it's at that point, tuning is where you actually have to know some SQL or transact SQL.
But I really appreciate that we've taken it, getting to tuning the right query is the hard part. Are you actually working on the thing that matters?
That is so true. And one of the things that I find very frequently is, and I guess that's what my whole process, my whole methodology is about, is kind of filtering out the noise.
Right.
Because, you know, there's noise at every step of the way. And particularly when that noise is a very important user, you know, and they're complaining and the phone is ringing, and you've got to be responsive. So being able to filter out the noise from the actionable information is indeed very, very hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
and how many times have you seen a guy pour his heart and soul into rewriting a query to make it faster and have no impact on the application performance at all?
It seems like at least half of the time,
yeah.
If not more, you know.
Like you worked on I'm glad you did some work, but you worked on the wrong thing.
Yes. You know, in fact, there's a kind of often found situation where SQL Server could be suffering a death by 1,000 cuts.
Right.
So, a developer who's worked really hard on figuring out where the problem is, they find the biggest query, and, you know, it takes an hour to run this query, and they tune it, and they get that query to run in, let's say, 20 minutes instead of 60 minutes. Huge improvement. But what they didn't think about is that query runs 3 times a week.
Yeah. Once a month.
Yeah. when in fact the query that runs in half a second is the one he should have worked on,
right?
Because that query is actually called multiple times a second,
yeah,
by lots, you know, dozens. So if he can shave off a quarter second on that time, he's going to save, you know, bazillions of CPU,
yes,
cycles.
Well, and there's an interesting threshold that happens when you get below contention, right? Like it's running 3 times a second right now, and it takes a half a second, which means that at any given point, there's at least two of them running. And as soon as you got it down to a quarter second, so there's only ever one of them running, it goes dramatically faster.
That's a good point. You know, when you're in resource contention like that, that's where problems really surface. And it kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier, where, you know, welcome to having a good problem. You're now busy enough for this to actually register.
Yes. I've always been stunned at how busy a website can be and still only one page being served at any given moment. As the number rises to something extraordinary like 2, all hell breaks loose.
Right. There's a tipping point where,
yeah,
it goes from not bad at all to,
oh my God,
awful.
What happened?
Mm-hmm. Right. And now just to throw out as well, if you are at that query tuning level, my company offers a free tool, and I like to brag that it's so free we don't even ask for an email address. We don't track it in any way. Hundreds of thousands of users. It's called Plan Explorer. And if you're not really familiar with SQL, it's really tough for you to make the leap from, say, a declarative language like ASP.NET or,
yes,
C Sharp, because you're telling the system exactly what to do in a step-by-step fashion. But SQL statements don't work that way. They're declarative. So it's kind of like telling your kid you want them to go to the store and come back with, you know, eggs, bread, and milk. And so you don't know if they're, you know, in the case of one of my daughters, you don't know if she's flirting with a cashier for 20 minutes or if she actually, you know, it took her that long to go in and get it.
Right.
But with that declarative code, you don't know. The procedural stuff like C Sharp, you tell it exactly, you know, I want you to
do this, then do this, then do this, right, then do this.
Go to this aisle, pick up this thing, pay the cashier $20 and leave. So it's very different. And that's a big kind of jump, a mental abstraction that is hard to get a hold of. So one of the things that you want to do when you are tuning a query is you want to see what choices SQL Server made on your behalf. You know, the query optimizer chooses what it's going to do.
Right.
Uses this algorithm called a cost-based optimizer. And so it says, well, I think it's going to cost a lot more to spend time over here than over there.
And it is making assumptions based on statistics.
That's right. That's right. And in fact, it may come back that the system's designed well. It's just that the index statistics are very stale. They haven't been updated in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So those should be updated. But it could come back that, you know, the optimizer is choosing really bad execution plans. And so that tool, Plan Explorer, makes it crystal clear that might be the case.
Yes.
You know, here's a column that you're using as a search argument that has no index on it. And so it's really slow because of that.
Query plans have that information in them. They're just hard to read. And there's never been good documentation for them.
Exactly. And that's, in fact, the way this tool was created was we created it for our own support team to help our customers, you know, troubleshooting their environments, for our support guys. And so our customers would say, well, I've been looking at that query plan all day and I never saw what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, well, we got this little tool that puts it in red when this certain kind of condition appears.
Right.
And they're like, well, can I have that? We said, sure, why not?
Yeah. No kidding.
And so it does that sort of thing. It puts, you know, the bad things in red and the moderate things in orange. And it's all information that's in there already. And so if you have the time to really become skilled at that, then by all means do that. You know, read the books from Paul Randall and Kalen Delaney and,
right,
and those sorts of things. But if you don't have the time, sometimes a tool, especially if it's free like this one, what could be better? You know, just show me what's wrong. So,
but now you found, okay, this thing's glowing red. And maybe it's a statistics problem. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's just a big table you're querying poorly. Now you get into this game of how do I rewrite my query? Because I don't know, in the past few years, I've just not been convinced that the SQL Server query engine makes bad plans. It makes, like, I've never seen it make a worse plan than was available to it, really, that a given expression runs poorly.
Well, that's a great point. And so SQL Server will try to choose the very best plan that it has available to itself at any given time. And like you said, it's rare for SQL Server to make a really, really bad choice.
Yeah.
So there are certain things you can do. For example, you can change the way you've written the query. Mm-hmm. You can give it a little guidance. You could give it a hint. So that's, you know, that's some special kind of code that you can put into your SQL statement that says, I want you to always recompile this SQL statement right. every time you run it, because it's on a table that has, you know, any given moment, it may have very different statistics than it did a few moments ago. Mm-hmm. And so I want you to never use one that's in the cache, because I can't rely on the execution plan that's in the cache, because it might not be effective each time. You can do all kinds of things with those hints. You could say, I want you to use a specific kind of join algorithm, mm-hmm. or, you know, I want you to a real common one that developers love, but should be careful of, is no lock. I want you to not issue any
locks on it while you're doing this.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I don't care if my data is actually right.
That's right.
As long as there's only one user on the system, this will work great.
That's right. Oh, man. So, yeah. So just issue shared locks and nothing else on this.
Yeah.
So another thing you can do, depending on the situation, is this is something that you can get on my personal website, kevinekline.com. I have a slide deck up there about trace flags. Mm-hmm. And so you can set a variety of different trace flags that will change the default behavior of SQL Server to be non-default. For example, one that I often recommend, that if you're on a more recent version of SQL Server, say the last couple releases, you might want to enable a trace flag called 4199. And what that says is, if there have been some cumulative updates, hot fixes and stuff installed on this SQL Server, then just turn on all of those query optimizer improvements. And the reason they put this one out there was, in the old days, and by that I mean up to like 3 releases ago, you had to manually turn on every cumulative update and service pack update to the optimizer. And so right. you might have dozens and dozens of trace flags for special kinds of conditions, whereas now you've got just one trace flag that says, use all the good stuff that Microsoft has put out that is available to me.
Nice. Well, that's certainly an improvement in the approach to it. And I do appreciate this idea that unless you're really doing something wonky, most of the time, the query planner is doing the best query plan it has with the data available at the time. So question the data you have around the plan more than the query itself. I just am always skeptical of that. Your ability to tell the query planner how to do the plan is better than its ability. It's a specialist. That's what it does.
Right. Indeed. Now, there is one little asterisk I would put on that sentence, and I know you're going to agree with me when you hear it, and that is, if you're using an ORM to develop your code,
yeah,
one of the, you know, Link to SQL or Entity Framework or in Hibernate, mm-hmm. those aren't smart like humans are.
Right.
And so I find that they are very, very good, very reliable for the CRUD sort of stuff, you know, the create, yeah. retrieve, update, delete sort of things. But if you have a big multi-part sort of GUI you're trying to build and you're using an ORM for that, those will actually send bad queries.
Pretty ugly queries.
Yeah, exactly.
But these days, good ORMs allow us, working with our DBA, to slide stored procedures and things in to make them, to optimize where you need to optimize.
Exactly. And that's the fix. So what we recommend, it's the industry standard, is if you're using ORM for anything really sophisticated, put a stored procedure behind it rather than going directly to the base tables. Mm-hmm. You're going to get much, much better performance and much better queries.
And I feel like that circles us back to the beginning, which is, this is a DevOps problem, right? This is application performance problems as a whole, and having a SQL guy working closely with a dev side by side, where we could say he's used this very efficient way to code with an ORM, but it's making lousy SQL, being able to optimize that with stored procedure or some other technique, that's a good solution. That's utilizing both sets of skills.
You know, that's really good career advice in general, mm-hmm. I would say, is, you know, if you're the kind of person who wants to come in and sit down at your desk and only interface with your machine, There's certainly a lot of work in IT for that kind of person.
Right.
However, you're really going to be a lot more successful if you talk to the people involved, right?
Right.
Sit down with that dev. Sit down, if you're on the dev side, sit down with that ops person and get to know their challenges. And that kind of communication and, because we each have our specialties and our silos.
Sure. And stuff and that so we're good
when,
at.
Exactly. When you talk to each other, you can get more done in a 5-minute conversation than in 30 emails.
For sure.
And so you'll really just kind of amplify your ability to be effective and
And I'm a big believer in escalating communication paths. If the email is getting longer, it's not working. It should get shorter. Switch to phone. If the phone's not working, have a meeting. And the ultimate manifestation of communication is pizza.
Amen.
Yes, sir. Hey, Kevin, it's super fun to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Richard, always a pleasure. Look forward to doing it again someday.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.